Welcome to the 17th episode of the It's Been Said podcast. I'm your host, SAI Executive Director, Lisa Ramey. Each show is dedicated to conversations on leadership as we further SAI's mission to support, encourage, and develop Iowa's educational leaders and learners. We're excited this month to welcome Greg Defoe, Superintendent at Adel DeSoto Minburn Community School District. Greg is celebrating 16 years at ADM. Greg grew up in Center Point and attended the University of Iowa and UMKC for his college education. Prior to being ADM superintendent, he also served in the Center Point Urbana Community School District in Iowa and the Liberty Schools in Missouri. Well, good morning, Greg. Thanks for being here this morning.
Good morning, Lisa. It's certainly a pleasure to join you today.
Yeah, so we have Greg Defoe. He's superintendent at Adel DeSoto Minburn. And Greg, tell us a little bit about Adel DeSoto Minburn, ADM School District.
Yeah, that's a great question to start with. And I've thought a bit about that. Some data about us. We're a district of about 2,200 students, just west of Des Moines, just a handful of miles west of Waukee. We're growing like many of the suburban schools around the Des Moines area. So we're growing. We just finished a really large capital project master planning process that resulted in a bond issue that was significant for us. It was a $58 million bond issue ask in November that passed with virtually 80% approval. And the first major project that will, you know, stem from that passage of that bond issue will be a new high school that is slated to open fall of 27. So we are so excited about that. It's hard to contain. The significance of building a new high school in a system like ours. So we're just super excited about that. So that's been a huge win for us this fall. And, you know, this is my 16th year at ADM, and I love it so much that it's easy for me to say, I think it's the best soup job in the state. And I'm just really glad to be here and be surrounded by the people that I get to work with every day. So it's a great place, and it's been a pleasure to serve here.
Yeah. Well, boy, that sounds really exciting. And what support, 80%. Wow.
No question. Especially for the size, you know, 58 million was a bigger number by, you know, a fair measure than we've ever passed before. So we feel really good about that.
Yeah. Very exciting. Well, there's other exciting things happening at ADM. And one of those is your work with 4DX. So how did you come across the 4DX principles?
Well, I love that question because it's just pretty simple. The story around that is we were addressing, and I'll talk more about that in a moment, I think. We were starting to address our brutal facts, you know, where we identified some downtrends in our literacy achievement, and we were struggling with what to do. And Travis Wilkins, my executive director, came down and handed me the book, Four Disciplines of Execution. He had read it in a book study at another of the place he was at before he came here. And he said, take a peek. So I was interested because I like things issued or developed by Franklin Covey. You know, I love the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I use the Franklin Covey, planning system, you know, so I trusted their stuff. Read The Speed of Trust a few years ago. So I've had quite a bit of experience utilizing Covey products. So that helped too. And so I went home and I read it and I loved it. And then we just jumped in. And then we can talk more about the process as we go through here. But it was really simple. We were looking for something different because we were pretty assured that if we did things the same way we had been doing them, we'd get the same results. And this was a significant paradigm shift, and we just really fell in love with it and jumped in with both feet and got really messy with it. So that's the story behind how we latched onto 4DX.
Yeah, well, very good. So that probably kind of goes into our next one around the why. Anything to add for our listeners specifically for that why 4DX?
Yeah. Yes, there is. Before we launched into 4DX, that was just one part of what we call our radical leadership reset. you know, something we touched on pretty in depth at the at our SAI presentation last August. And before we could get to successful implementation of a new operating system around improvement like 4DX, we had to do quite a few things pretty significantly differently. One of those was going back to the Jim Collins notion of addressing your brutal facts and being looking under the rock, we call it. You know, we use all that language all the time in how we talk with each other. And so we needed to do that. And as we identified some things we didn't like. And so that was really connected. So our student achievement in literacy wasn't what we wanted. That was clear. And it was what people wouldn't believe unless we told them, because we were given kind of a free pass. I mean, people were high performing in a lot of ways. Our data sets are above state averages and in a lot of ways that we can compare ourselves to others. We looked okay. But it wasn't hitting our mission. And that was a simple mission statement of high levels of learning for all students. So we had to have something different after we looked at the brutal facts, and we put together this leadership reset, and 4DX was our operating system on how we were going to go about school improvement differently. So it was what we needed in order to have new actions to get results that we knew we couldn't get if we kept doing the same things we've been doing.
So you mentioned your presentation at SAI, our conference in the fall. And at that session, you talked about the importance of taking responsibility for the system. Mm-hmm. Can you tell our listeners what taking responsibility means to you personally and to your team? And that team can be your administrative team, the board team, all of the above.
Yeah, for the purpose of this question, I'll talk about this from the perspective of myself first. You know, as the superintendent, when we adopted this and moved forward, and then we needed to take it to scale with everybody in our system, every teacher, every administrator in our buildings, one of the first messages that I shared at our back to school welcome in August of 2021 was that I'm responsible for the downward trend line in literacy. As a leader, and we have this in our meeting room, you know, the quote that we have on our wall is, as a leader, you own responsibility for the system. It was super clear as we read the book, and it's in the book, is that oftentimes your people are not the problem. It's the leadership that is. Our folks were positioned to get the results that we had put them in to get because they were super great. And the limitations or the limitations that were placed on them by me was really the factor that mattered the most. So it was really me. And then secondarily, our administrative team, you know, our principals and our executive director of teaching and learning all joined me in that message, where we took collective responsibility for the results that the system was getting, and we vowed to change the system. Because again, it was simply the belief is it's not our people. You know, our teachers are outstanding, and so it was about us. And taking that responsibility was really important as we started, because our teachers are so passionate and they want to achieve at such high levels, and they were only doing what they were asked to do. And so we couldn't burden them with how things had been done in the past. We needed to provide hope that things can be different in the future. And so that's really about what taking responsibility is. It's not our people. It's ourselves as leaders, and what can we do to every extent possible to change the conditions in which our teachers can perform.
What part, if any, did the Board of Education have in that responsibility piece?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. We've kept the board apprised of this work. Really, I'd have to go back and check, but it wasn't long after we jumped in and we adopted this as our operating system. We didn't seek board approval to utilize 4DX as our school improvement model. You know, we weren't that official, but they were certainly aware of what we were doing through really detailed, you know, board reports and updates. And that stemmed really from sharing the data with them, sharing the brutal facts, informing them that we were no longer going to live in the space where we were outperforming the state averages and those other kind of comparison metrics, and that we were really going to reflect on our performance based on our mission statement. And they embraced all of that. They are so very effective in that I didn't feel unsafe as a leader to be transparent about our brutal facts and how we were going to go about addressing them. So that was really, really, really important. If the superintendent and board team relationship is dysfunctional, this could be more complicated. I didn't face that. So that positioned us really well. And we continue to keep them updated. They know really to a pretty deep detail about our process and how we're utilizing 4DX.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I applaud you and your team. When you look at the results, like you have described them, right? If you're outperforming others, right, in the state average, you could easily say, hey, we're doing great work here, right? And why change? So I applaud you for really seeing how those results match to your mission statement and going, hey, we're not meeting our mission statement. So we need to find a different way, because sometimes it's easier to, right? Yes. To say, hey, we're doing good work. So
yes, Lisa, you hit on one of the fundamental shifts that we made is that, and this even resulted in the shift away from comparing ourselves to other districts or the state or national averages on ACT and et cetera, and really looking at our mission statement was so super important for us. And then what that allowed us to do is not play in an unreal environment. We didn't want to hide anymore. We want all this to be really real. And, you know, how we're performing against a neighboring district or, you know, the state average or the Heartland AEA average, that's, you know, we'll dip into those every once in a while as we do some systems checks and, you know, how are we doing as a system in relationship to other, but that's such a small percentage of the time that we spend, because we know the important thing is what is our mission statement say. Mm-hmm. So that's been something that's given us the strength and the muscle to not just get, you know, a free pass when one might exist. Mm-hmm. And we weren't forced into it. We weren't forced into exposing these things and talking about them transparently. We did them willingly because we wanted to do something that we didn't know if we could do or not, and we embraced it. So
yeah, you took a risk.
We did. Yeah.
All right. So we know that as the title says, there's four disciplines, the four disciplines of execution. So really want to jump into each of those individually to help our, you know, listeners understand a little bit around each of those four disciplines. So the first discipline is focus on the wildly important goals. So could you provide just an overview of that first discipline for our listeners?
Yes. Thank you, Lisa. The key to this is to remember as we go through each of the four disciplines that they can't be done independently. They have to be done as a set of four. The authors in the book, Four Disciplines of Execution, are really clear about that, is that you try to pull one or two out and do those two because they're more comfortable or you understand them better. That won't lead to significant gains. So that we were really focused on that, is to make sure that we adopted the system as a whole. So the first discipline is to focus on the wildly important, or what they call a WIG. They shorten that to WIG. This will make a lot of sense to most people. And it's because we're pretty good about identifying goals and making them into what they call lag measures. They describe it as X to Y by when, you know, so it's really like an improvement in the percentage of students proficient on the state tests and on ISAS could be a lag measure. But the key here is that you focus on like one. Your wildly important is a wildly important goal. they give some information about as you add goals, the likelihood that you'll achieve any of them decreases significantly. So it's one. That is a paradigm shift for, that was a paradigm shift for us, really for two reasons. One is that we the more goals we have, the busier we look. Then it gives us a little bit of space, again, in that place that we don't think is very real, is that we have several goals. People will think we're really, really busy. Franklin Covey they blow that up. So it's really about focus, and it's what's on your most wildly important. That really talks about what is so important in your system to do that you can't not. So we as administrators, as leaders, are really challenged to do this well. They talk about how difficult it is for leaders to say no to good things. So we say no to a lot of good things. We have one wig and it's around literacy, and that's provided the focus for us to do something that we couldn't do if we had several. So that's really important for us. And there are several ways that educators can determine this. Our way, and they're outlined in the book. Our way was pretty simple. We identified literacy as our wig as an administrative team, so there, and that included the building level leaders. It didn't include teachers at that point in time. We didn't have the time for that to be a super collaborative exercise, but we felt like we needed to move. So there are a lot of ways to identify your wigs. We did it as a leadership team, or as our team one. So focus on the wildly important is about the concept of focus, and that's very important.
All right, so that kind of leads into then the second discipline is acting on the lead measures. Yes. So how do you, I heard you talk about legs. So what is a lead measure? How do you identify those and then leverage those to help you move towards attaining that goal that you've set?
No question. The lead measures are the hardest to identify, and they're the most important. We're pretty used to identifying, well, too many goals in the X to Y by when. It's really the lead measures that are most important, to the 4DX process. Teams identify those, and really we call those, the book calls those strategic bets. So say, for example, a third grade team sits down and they discuss what are the fewest number of actions that they can do that will lead to attainment of their team wig that is then aligned to the building wig that is aligned to the district wig. So everything's in alignment. So they go through a process where it has to be predictive of meeting the lag or the wig, and it has to be influenceable. It has to be something that they have control and influence over. They can't set lead measures around things that other people are responsible to do. So working through the lead measures is the facet of the operating system that we're spending the most time on this year, trying to get better at, to learn more and refine, because it's so important. And part of the difficulty is identifying how do you track the data, because you are in our WIG sessions, we are tracking how we're doing on those lead measures, and there it's really done weekly. So the lead measures are so very important, and the best thing about it is that the teachers decide at the collaborative team level, and they're getting more and more adept at identifying those strategic bets that they feel will help them meet their team WIG.
Mm-hmm. And you may not, Greg, but do you have an example of what a lead measure is? You talked about a lag being like our state testing, so that's at the end. But
yes,
an example of a lead measure.
Yeah, one example when we first started was simply a team developing a lead measure that they would progress monitor 100% of the students who needed to be progress monitored. Now, that is a facet of lead measures that can seem too simple for people. But there's an element that's related to identifying a wig and having it be one. And that's what the authors call a whirlwind. And so we as educators have great intentions, and our day job, or the whirlwind, the regular job of being a teacher or an administrator oftentimes drowns out a person's ability to do what they intend to do. So we were not progress monitoring to the degree that we needed to as a system. So that became a really simple, you know, lead measure. So each teacher would develop the teacher team would develop a percentage goal around progress monitoring, the students who needed to be progress monitored that week. And then they'd report out on that at their WIG session. Mm-hmm. So an example of a secondary lead measure would be implementation of a literacy-based strategy that they learned about in a previous professional development. So they'd commit to doing a strategy that they had learned about. And again, as we know, one of the downfalls of professional development is the teachers just don't have the ability. It's difficult for them to go from theory or learning to action. Mm-hmm. We've kind of the secret sauce in this is that we really are not facing that anymore by virtue of the fact that they adopt those things as lead measures. And then there's more accountability and they're just more apt to do it because of the mm-hmm. focus. Mm-hmm. So those are two examples.
Yeah, thank you for that. That will, I'm sure, be helpful to our listeners. So you mentioned, as you were talking about the lead measures, about, you know, keeping, I'll call it score, right? Or having those weekly meetings. So that leads to that third discipline, keep a compelling scoreboard.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What does that mean to keep a compelling scoreboard? How are scoreboards designed? How does a scoreboard fit when you're thinking about the academic part of the work?
Yes. You know, it's all around the psychology of this through the Franklin Covey folks. It's all around people want to, they play to win, and they play harder when you're keeping score. And it's based on the principle of engagement. So that's so very important. So educators, our teachers design their own scoreboards. They can be on the chart paper on the wall. Many of them use simple spreadsheets, and it's where they input their data on their lead measures on a weekly basis. And so some have color coding. They just look a lot different from team to team to team. So there's no one template for an individual team's scoreboard. They update their lead measure data on a weekly basis. And this is also where they oftentimes chart their commitments. The commitments are statements of their promises that they're making to their team and what they're going to do that will help lead to the lead measure being done. So the scoreboards look a lot of different ways, and they are very, very engaging for our staff. And the key to all of this is, you think of the difference here. With our previous school improvement plans, there was oftentimes no regular routine status checks. Mm-hmm. And so they'd sit for a long, long time. Oftentimes we'd lose sight of them because there was lack of focus. And then all of a sudden we'd get our lag measure data back and we'd go, oh boy, we better go back in and even in arrears, plug in some of the things that we had done that were quasi linked to our goal. These are done weekly. And so that's just super important. And our people are competitive and they want to win. And this gives them the sense that what they're doing on a weekly basis will lead to attainment of the WIG, of the wildly important goal. And if it doesn't, they'll shift. So the lead measures are not static. They can be adjusted over time as they monitor their results that they're getting.
Mm-hmm. Well, so Greg, as you were talking, you know, you think about if you have educators looking at these lead measures on a weekly basis, it sounds like, and you mentioned, right, the accountability piece, you didn't use that term, but oftentimes, you know, in previous school improvement models, we'd look at measures months later that we could, usually they were summative type data that you really couldn't then make a change at that time. Right. So that is the fourth discipline here in the 4DX, that create a cadence of accountability. So mm-hmm. Talk about what that cadence looks like. How did that, just share with us about that.
It's kind of in the expression, you know, the fourth discipline, create a cadence of accountability. You know, the cadence means there's just a routine. You know, there's a flow. It's expected. It really needs to be weekly. And I'm going to flow into the week session. You know, our week sessions are meant to be 10 to 15 minutes a week, and they do meet weekly. So our teacher teams meet weekly, 10 to 15 minutes to identify how they progressed on their lead measure, and to make commitments for the next week as to what they're going to do. And they do that with their team. Is this is based in the principle of accountability. And that word is one that we really needed to make sure our folks understood what that meant. I don't look at our teacher team's scoreboards and their accountability. They're accountable to each other. Mm. So this isn't a superintendent's going to peek in and say, well, you know, your trend line's down this week, or you didn't keep your commitment that you stated that you would this past week. This is all for teacher teams to work within as part of their PLC culture. And that's really embedded very well into our pretty healthy PLC system. So when we talk about accountability, it's really, you know, teacher to teacher on that teacher team, which is, I think, you know, more powerful. There's not fear here. There's not a sense of got you. They're professionals and are actuating this on a week-to-week basis. And we as administrators are not in the weeds when things, you know, might not have went as they intended. They make the adjustments and they're accountable to each other. So the routineness of the meetings, the routineness of going through the accountability of updating the scoreboard on a weekly basis is one that is, again, super important. And if you go without it, this will fail.
Mm-hmm. Hey, as you were talking, it made me think. So we spent a lot of time talking about the four different disciplines at the classroom level. Does the administrative team have a scoreboard? And if so, what does that cadence look like for the accountability? How does that look?
You know, we don't. We've talked through that a lot. They are really, and the book kind of separates this out, because depending on your position in the district, they can look different. It can look differently. They're really leaders. Our PLC leaders are what we call leaders of frontline teams. Okay, so our PLC leader really drives the work of their collaborative team, and they're leaders of frontline teams. Our principals are really leaders of their collaborative team leaders. You know, so their job is to manage the 4DX process with their teacher leaders. Mm-hmm. And so the principals are supportive and engaged with that work on a weekly basis, but they're not, since their ability to influence any lead measure on a week-to-week basis is limited, because they're helping support all PLC teams in their building. They are not part of the cadence of accountability with any one particular team.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Absolutely. That was a wonder I had.
Yeah.
So how can then the four disciplines of execution positively impact student learning outcomes, teacher performance, or your overall school improvement? What have you seen since you've been on this path?
Well, we use the word unprecedented in terms of our improvement. When we started, we had one fourth of our students, 25% of our students were not proficient on either the FAST assessment or the ISAS ELA tests. And again, that was a brutal fact that people were not ready for, or they didn't know existed until we shared it in that way. So, you know, one out of four here was several hundred students, you know, and we represented this at our first meeting with all staff back in the August of 21, where we would be over capacity in our auditorium with a number of students who weren't proficient the previous year. And that was 500 plus kids. That was pretty eye-opening. You know, in the 3-year time span, we've cut that in half. You know, so our goal this year is to reduce the student number, the percentage of students who are not proficient, from 13% in the district to 8%. You know, so it's another aggressive goal. And, but that's impacted hundreds of students' lives. So we've seen it impact our whole system. On a more micro basis, it's impacted how we we just know what we're doing and who's doing it. And teachers are committing to things that otherwise might have been drowned out by the whirlwind. They're making commitments about things they're learning. They're the fundamental elements of our MTSS system, if, as an example. Those things are actually being done, and we know they're being done. We're not just hoping that they're being done, because they're being tracked and monitored by those teacher teams. So our, I think in the PLC language is that, you know, when you know better, you need to do better. Well, we know that we're doing better because we're tracking it. And I think that's a major difference, because we're not letting the whirlwind really beat us up anymore. We're managing it. We're, you know, in the 4DX process really asks systems to devote 20% of your available time and resources to achieving your WIG. You know, so we talk about that a lot, is how are you managing your calendar? And, you know, how do we know 20% of our efforts going into doing something that can't be done without that level of commitment? And we don't think we could have went from 25% to 13% over a 3-year period without that level of commitment. We would still be roughly hanging around the 25% mark. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with your unprecedented term used there. Wow.
Yes.
It's fantastic. Congratulations.
It's been amazing. We know that we're up against that next percentage move is going to be our hardest probably. And, you know, that's another thing that I think we've done pretty adeptly, is that we don't let not meeting our goal, because we also put a stake in the ground and said, you know, we're no longer making improvement goals of 2 or 3%. You know, we were making some goals in our past when we evaluated how we were going about goal setting and school improvement that were probably statistically insignificant. And so we just said, we're going to be aggressive. And that's another fundamental tenet of how we want to operate, is that, and we have this on our wall too, is that, you know, a good plan aggressively implemented is better than waiting for a perfect plan. You know, so we're just, it's game on for us. We just want to rock and roll and be aggressive and not wait for things to be perfect. So we've made significant strides, and at some point we'll have to decide when we move off, when we take literacy out of the WIG status and put it back in the whirlwind, and what do we bring into this system to focus on with this kind of focus.
Mm-hmm. So as I look at my next question, we really kind of talked around this, but you really ended up having some significant results. Was that a surprise to you?
Well, it was less. Yeah, yes, it was. But it was a lot less surprising than if we would have done what we had been doing, because then okay. It would have been like luck, or we would have had less confidence in that actually our actions were what were responsible for the gains, you know. So we were surprised to a sense. You know, again, as we function within the system, our work with the lead measures and the things that we were doing, again, the lead measures have predictive value. So if we make a decision at the teacher team level on the lead measures, they're making a decision that they feel confident that if we do these actions, we'll meet our WIG. And we had a broader sense of what the actions were being done across our system than we'd ever had before. So our confidence was higher than it had been. There's no question, because we had a great sense of what was being done that had leverage and influence.
Yeah. So what are those, I guess, key metrics or any changes that administrators should be looking for to measure the effectiveness of the implementation of this process?
Yeah, our principles are tremendous. The 4DX is really the focus of our district leadership team meetings. You know, our DLT, as we call it, meets monthly. You know, it's nothing different about our DLT probably, and it's comprised of our administrators and our PLC leaders and instructional coaches. So we meet on a monthly basis, and the 4DX is the focus of those meetings. And really, we've been focusing on implementation of the second discipline, implementing lead measures, as I mentioned earlier. So really, they are really getting at how to implement 4DX at the building level with their teams. You know, they sit in on the 4DX WIG sessions to the degree that they can. Are teams having the meetings? You know, are they canceling them? What are all their teacher teams? Are they having the meetings that are set? Are the WIG sessions that they're seeing, do they have the elements in it that we've committed to? You know, those kind of things are what our administrators are doing with their teacher leaders and their teacher teams.
Mm-hmm. So if there are any of our listeners who are considering the 4DX process, maybe even said, hey, we want to do this already, what advice would you have for them as they consider or are moving towards implementation?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, a couple of things, and I don't mean these to come across any other way than just actuality. Don't start 4DX if you're satisfied with your results. Mm-hmm. You know, there won't be the energy for it or the ability to withstand the hard work, because as the authors talk about, this says easy, does hard. So this is a hard process. And if you're happy with your results, you won't withstand the labor necessary to implement it and stay the course. So we're in our fourth year of execution, and it's going to be work that we'll continue to have to learn about and do into forever. A second caution I would have is that if your administrative team is not really super healthy, do that first. You know, we did, as I mentioned earlier, when we started, we did a lot of things around leadership and our administrative team that we call Team One before or simultaneously as we work through the 4DX process. Because this is, if there's gaps between administrators, especially superintendent and building principals, as an example, those gaps will become, could become canyons as the stress of this work kind of gets at a team. So if your team's not really healthy, I would exercise some caution to go there first and to really look at Patrick Lencioni's concept of Team One. So again, we don't have time to talk about that. But that is a hugely important facet of our leadership reset. So another thing I would say is the superintendent has to lead. You know, this isn't something, irregardless of how the size of the system, I think the superintendent has to lead this and be deeply engaged with it, or else there could become gaps in other leaders. Gaps between another central office position and a set of building principals, as an example. So those things just happen. And I think we need to recognize that oftentimes it's not all healthy and functional between the different leadership positions in an organization. So, but the soup has to lead and be deeply engaged around this work. So that's another very important facet. So again, this says easy, does hard. You got to just jump in and do and learn. And if you're having difficulty identifying brutal facts, that would be a place to start, is that you have to come around. Are you really living out your mission statement? Have you, as we were, and these are all things I can speak to that we had to address. Have you led kind of a safe life as a district leader regarding the facts of student achievement? So those would be some recommendations that I have. Lean into the book, read it three times. There's videos. SAI has a relationship with Franklin Covey now that I would also recommend, and just stay the course. So, but it is hard work. And another thing that they caution against is that it's paradigm shifting, you know, so, and it's going to be, you're going to have to address some of the things that we kind of hold on to. And as an example, we talked about the inclination to have a lot of goals. And sometimes that comes from a place that maybe isn't all that real. You know, the more goals we have, the busier we look, that kind of thing. You know, so it can be counterintuitive, and we have to embrace that counterintuitiveness in order to fight some of our own psychology. And if you're not willing to do that or address those things, this could be pretty difficult. This system can't be just layered on top of everything else that you've been doing. So it takes too much time, effort, energy to do if you're just going to ask others to just do it on top of everything else. So we're not adding new things. We're trying to be cognizant of getting really good at this without adding three more new things that staff have to learn next year. So those are a few things, Lisa.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for, gosh, just sharing your journey, for giving of your time to help other administrators in Iowa and maybe beyond, right? Really learn about the 40X process and how it can really make a difference in a school system. So thank you so much, Greg. Really appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Lisa, for asking me. I'm humbled. I'd be remiss without, kind of leaving this with a shout out to, I go back to June of 2021 as kind of my walk off year. We sat for a full day with our team one, our building principals, assistant principals, and Travis and myself. And they jumped into this with both feet, with a sense of energy and aggression. And I'm telling you that I have a great team of people who believe in this really strongly and are fighting through it every day. So I'm in a great spot to be able to call upon something like four disciplines of execution and work on it with the people I get to spend my time with. So they're phenomenal, and I certainly couldn't do any of this without them. So thank you. And if anyone has any questions, we're open. Lisa, I'm going to close with, I think this could be the difference. We don't have the answer at ADM. I really do think that Franklin Covey and four disciplines of execution is an answer. It's a paradigm in regards to school improvement that could be a significant game changer for districts across the state. So thank you and SAI's willingness to jump in and partner with Franklin Covey on this system. So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. You're very welcome. We see really how it can benefit schools, and stories like yours, right? Just reinforce that for us. So,
right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. And that concludes another episode of the It's Been Said podcast. We hope you enjoyed diving into the four disciplines of execution. If you want to learn more, look for upcoming professional learning opportunities regarding the four essential roles and or the four disciplines of execution on the SAI website. We'll be back next month with another guest. Until then, stay curious, stay inspired, and keep learning.